This is only a test is supported by Citi cards with Android Pay. Listening on your phone? Now you can pay while you listen, using the same device. Just tap and go. Download the Android Pay app on Google Play or visit citi.com/AndroidPay to get started. Android Pay is available for eligible Citi consumer credit and debit cards.
Hey, let's start the show.
For Thursday, July 21st, 2016, welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Welcome, everyone, for joining us on this very special, I guess we can call it a duo cast. Duo?
Duo cast? Is that like Duolingo?
Duo? It's one of those words I can never pronounce properly because every time I want to say it, I say duel, like D-U-E-L.
What about it takes two to make a thing go right? No, that's creepy. That's weird.
No. Duo cast.
Okay, duel cast.
Duo cast. Duel cast. Of course, that's Kishore Hari, the other half of the duo.
Hello.
This week, and also running our soundboard.
I have the power.
The master of sounds this week. And thank you again. We are, Jeremy's out camping, I believe, this week. Will's been traveling. People are out of the office because we are in preparation for San Diego Comic-Con.
Final prep for Comic-Con.
Final prep. We're flying down. I'm flying down tomorrow. Kishore, you're flying down Thursday. It's going to be a long weekend. It'll be my, 2016? This will be my 12?
Oh, wow. Double digits.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2. No, wait. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. My 12th Comic-Con.
That's incredible.
I did some math. I did some counting. Just like Lawrence O'Donnell, I did some counting on live television.
That's amazing. And this year, it has the biggest Tested contingent ever, I think, right?
I believe so. So let's do a quick roll call of the crew. First of all, our crew, while we did lose Will this year, Will's not going to Comic-Con. We got Adam Isaac, who's our new producer. So me, Joey, of course, Adam Isaac, Simone's going to be there, Adam's going to be there, Kishore, you're going to be there, right. And Rebecca Watson's going to be there.
Frank
Ippolito, of course, is going to be there. So it's
and then lots of friends have tested, of course, like in years past. So I have to ask, because I don't actually know everything. What can you talk about that's planned for the that the Tested fans will want to know about at Comic-Con?
Well, obviously, I cannot talk about the Incognitos.
Well, it's happening.
Is happening. Adam Incognito is definitely happening. I won't even say whether it's Incognito or Incognitos.
He's already announced that on Twitter, actually. Okay. He's already announced it.
All right, Incognitos are happening at some point in the weekend. So there will be costume walks throughout the Comic-Con floor. We'll be doing videos, of course.
Don't bother looking for us. You're not going to find us during the Incognitos.
There will be no Tested party this year.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Last year was such a blowout, too.
And I think last year was such a blowout that this year we had to take it a step back and not have a party. We're resetting. Resetting maybe next year.
But there is a Tested premium event that's happening.
Yes, yes. So we have partnered with IMDb, the fine folks at IMDb. Their presence at Comic-Con this year is going to be on a boat, on a yacht. The IMDb yacht behind the convention center. And so we're going to have some activities there. I believe Adam and Kevin Smith. So by the time you listen to this podcast, we'll all be down there. Adam and Kevin Smith are going to do something, a short panel there. There'll be...
Kevin interviewing Adam?
I'm not exactly
or
sure.
Or vice versa?
Yeah. As
much
as
anything with Kevin Smith is linear.
They're both funny guys. Exactly. And then we'll have some of those Adam's props for people to check out on the boat.
Oh, that's amazing. And this is the boat right behind the marina. I think you open it up to like 80 tested members. I think it's sold out already.
Yeah. So tested premium members got an email earlier this week. 8 of you were able to RSVP. And so you'll get access to that panel and boat. So very excited to see everyone there.
I know if Frank is coming to Comic-Con, usually that means something is happening. Are you doing something with Frank?
We are doing something with Frank. What I can say is that I was down in Frank's shop last Friday filming pieces with him about this project, and it will be, if the Rancor project that we did last year was One Direction, this is the different direction completely.
All right.
Yeah.
That is mysterious and weird. I assume, I mean, you can tell us, it's something in the costume Frank world of practical effects, right?
Yes. I mean, Frank is great at making costumes and making, doing creature-y things. So it's definitely in that realm. And we, of course, documented all of the fabrication and finishing of this project.
Give us a level of excitement you have for...
You know what? I want to say Rancor is probably, I don't think anything's going to top the Rancor in just terms of experience. Like how that buildup of like watching the Rancor turn from a maquette to a foam fabricated bodysuit and then seeing it for the first time as Frank dragged it out of his van into the hotel, the Hilton we were staying at last year. And then when he did that walk, which the walk was only about half an hour, we were so ambitious because we had these FPV goggles set up with a camera and the Rancor's nose with a cable set up so Frank could see what was going on, and then with a fan system that didn't work, you know, Frank almost dying. That level of excitement, the hand-holding of the Rancor was peak costuming for Frank. And this year, again, tonally a little different, but I'm still very excited.
What else are you excited about at Comic-Con? Because, I mean...
Nothing
like,
else. That's
nothing
it.
Else.
That's
it's just it. The
Comic-Con
tested
is
stuff.
Dead to me. Yeah, I mean, like 12 years into Comic-Con, I still love going. And the thing I'm looking most forward to personally for myself, outside of the stuff for work, is Sunday being able to walk around and actually being able to buy stuff. Because the past couple of years, going with Tested, going with Adam, we've just become more ambitious about what we want to do every year, especially last year when we walked through the floor with Chris Hadfield, you know, Andy Weir there. We did the project with Bill Duran. We also did three incognito walks.
Yeah,
last
Alton
year.
Brown, right?
Alton Brown with the Matrix costumes, the Matrix twins, Judge Dredd. Like, that was all super ambitious. In addition to the Rancor and the party, I just think that, like, it's good to kind of reset. But it keeps us busy. Like, yeah. There's a production calendar we have that's basically booked the moment that we land in San Diego on Wednesday to Saturday night Adam's panel at 6:45.
Which you guys should come to.
Yes.
I will say there are a few surprises in store. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be a great panel.
Yeah.
And that's for those that watched his TED Talk, which released last Friday, his homage to cosplaying.
Yeah,
I think this is a continuation of that story because the panel is all about cosplay.
Yeah. So it was funny, Adam was on his birthday that the TED Talk came
out. Oh, really?
Last Friday. And the TED Talk, he alluded to how he had spent a lot of time working on a TED Talk and then kind of scrapped it at the last minute and redid a whole new one. That's the one that ended up going up and then he performed in Vancouver. And then he shared his photo with Harrison Ford on Twitter. So I think it was a great culmination of his lifelong love of costuming. So it'll be your...
Second. So I am actually going the opposite direction. I'm going to be a whole lot less ambitious because the first time around it was like a blur and I was like, I'm going to go to this panel. I'm going to go to that panel. None of that stuff happened. I felt like I only half did anything. So this year I'm focused on a few things in the exhibit hall. I'm going to Artist Alley to see a couple artists that I haven't seen, and then there's probably three things I'm really excited about, and of them, I'm probably going to do one, maybe two, if I'm lucky. So first is The Killing Joke, which is a DC animated movie, is premiering Friday night in Ballroom 20. I'm not going to try to go see it on Friday night because I'm sure it's going to be insane, but it's the first R-rated DC animated movie. And that graphic novel that it's based on was one of the formative graphic novels in my life.
How do you feel about those DC animated films?
Because I love them. I love them.
They're strange because they're not a part of any kind of shared universe.
There's really sets of them that share a universe, that tell sort of linear stories going together, but they often just hit the reset button and tell new stories.
Because it's like sometimes it's different art styles because they are... the art team for those animated series take inspiration from the artists that worked on that specific comic book and story arc, which that writing team and the artists for that comic book, they changed it from time to time. So when in Batman, when they do the Batman ones, those are have a little bit more continuity from like Red Hood to Son of Batman. But then sometimes it's like All-Star Superman, which is completely
that was exciting. A one-off, yeah. Not all of them are hits, but I think I have a small set of favorites. Flashpoint Paradox is incredible.
Wow.
One of the better DC stories in my mind.
That's the Geoff Johns story, centering, of course, on Flash, but a parallel universe in which Flash, Barry Allen Flash, meets a version of Batman that is not like our Batman at all.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, and this isn't much of a spoiler, is based on the fact that Barry Allen goes back in time and saves his mother, and what the ramifications of that shift are pretty profound to the entire universe. That I thought was done really well. The adaptation was, it's a little bit violent, so it's definitely not for young kids, and that's partially why I enjoyed it so much. Dark Knight Returns, one of the most iconic graphic novels of all time, got a two-part movie, which I thought was gritty, true to the storyline, which I think was
it
plays on I think it's either on HBO or Stars right now. Yeah, if you want to catch it.
I hold the original ones in such high regard that it's tough to match how the story is told in a comic format and what Frank Miller did with the paneling and the talking heads, not the band The Talking Heads, but like in terms of like the news, like the commentary on news media and the 24-hour news cycle and that, even like you got glimpses of that in Batman v Superman, but I don't know if it actually translates to film.
I mean, they gave us old Batman, which is the whole point of that. And they showed all the failings of old Batman. And it was brutal. I thought it was great. And I'll give you one last one that's a surprising one, I think. It's Green Lantern First Flight. And it's it's sort of a semi-origin story for Green Lantern, and it involves Sinestro, which is, you know, his big bad. But you put all of those that we just mentioned side by side with their real action movie counterpart, real life action movie counterpart, excepting, you know, the first two Bale movies. I think these are above every other DC live action movie.
Wow.
Now, and so that's why I think I love the voice acting in it too.
The voice directors, I think it's not about getting just celebrities to do the voices.
I mean, they do get Mark Hamill to be the Joker, but he's
owned that character for so long. The one I would give recommendation for, and it's interesting that you say Green Lantern First Flight, which is based on the Geoff Johns run of Green Lantern, is another Green Lantern origin story done in animated form, which is DC's New Frontier.
Oh,
have you seen that?
Yeah, that's what's
it's
the artist
on
name?
Darwin, the writer artist Darwin Cook, who actually recently passed away. But it's a incredible, both the comic and the film. I think the film actually does a real good justice, both art style.
That's very golden age.
Yes, and the funny thing is Darwin Cook originated as an animator for Paul Dini on Batman Beyond and that Diniverse. So for it to come full circle and have his masterpiece, DC masterpiece, turned into an animated film and do it justice, I thought was very fitting.
Speaking of Paul, he's the other thing I'm really excited about at Comic-Con. And I'm going to tell you for once, stop listening to this podcast. Go listen to the Nerdist podcast with Paul Dini right now. And Chris Hardwick interviewed him. And Paul, for those that don't know, was the writer behind a lot of the original Batman the Animated Series from the early 90s. He wrote the first two the Arkham City and Arkham Asylum games. And he wrote this really personal graphic novel that Vertigo picked up about his own autobiographical life, about struggling with just sort of depression and self-worth amidst all of this external success that he was having as a writer for this, climaxing in this terrible traumatic event that happened to him. And I won't spoil it, but he writes this graphic novel with the villains of Batman and Batman himself sort of sitting imagined on his shoulder, driving his own actions. And I thought it was such a deeply personal, powerful tale. And Paul's going to be at Comic-Con doing signings and doing a couple panels about it. It was really surprising to see come out of that world. And I thought it was amazing. And that hour with Chris Hardwick, I thought, was one of the better podcasts I've listened to this past month.
Oh, great. Great.
Wait, we have to... We have...
Ooh, we're Inception back up. Nice.
We forgot one thing about Tested.
Yes.
The biggest news of Tested this week, congratulations, Norm. We hit 2 million subs.
Oh, we did. High five. Yeah, we did. Over this weekend, I'd been watching the numbers steadily. I think we are of every YouTube channel that possibly exists right now. We are number 970-something.
Right, yeah.
Right, which is not
Look
bad.
Out, 969. Yeah. We're coming for you.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, people watching this video on YouTube right now, for subscribing. It's been a long road, but we got there. We don't get any plaque or any additional.
We have to get to 10 million.
10 million to get the diamond plaque, which is I don't know if we'll ever get there, but never say never.
It's when Tested starts their React series. Yep. That's how we will get to 10 million.
Yeah. I don't think we'll ever sink down that low. To that type of content. Not that the content's bad. I'm just saying, like, that type of gut reaction content. But
did you ever see this as a possibility? I mean, you started Tested with Will. I mean, this predates Adam and Jamie.
Yep, yeah.
And everything else that's come
since
YouTube
then. Well, YouTube wasn't the business model back then. I mean, we had a dedicated player, proprietary player on the website, and we only started putting things on YouTube after we teamed up with Adam. So technically, the Tested YouTube channel, for which the top video for the longest time was A Dog Tests the iPad, circa 2010, played in Japanese television everywhere, starring Will's corgi, Chloe Banana Smith. That was like the star video on YouTube, and it wasn't until 2012 that we started putting more stuff on YouTube and all of our content on YouTube. And so really in the last 4 years, we've hit these milestones.
And do you have a favorite video after all of, like, how
That's
many?
That's a
like,
really good question.
Thousands of videos at this
point. We have 2,600 videos that we've shot for Tested. Do I have a favorite? It's like asking if you have a favorite movie. Like, there are videos I'm proud of because of the production value that maybe didn't perform so well. There are videos I have really fond memories about because of the specific context of the trip or the project that we did. There are videos that I love because of their success, unexpected success, or because things worked out because we'd planned it a certain way. I think it's really tough to pick a favorite video. I think I need to spend at least half an hour diving through the videos. There's definitely
maybe that'll be a premium video in the future. You
just
going
like me
through
sitting,
top
me watching,
five.
Me watching old Tested videos and like squirming. Oh no! No! Why did you do that? No.
Watching your hairstyle through the year.
Oh,
I do
gain weight, lose weight, gain weight, lose weight.
My favorite old school one is the one is the Lego Death Star and Star Destroyer one with you and Will. That's a great oldie.
Yeah, that was right in, I believe, March of 2012, right? One of our first videos that we put on YouTube when we started moving stuff over to YouTube, which was the culmination of a Tested premium series, Lego Death Star versus the Star Destroyer. And we all know how that ended.
It ended spectacularly.
Spectacularly, that's right. We didn't even have high-speed cameras back then to capture it in all its glory. It was all like, oh, let's hopefully point a camera there and make sure we get the shot and cut that 30 FPS down to 12 to slow it down a little bit. I thought the biggest Tested news this week, at least in Tested family news, was our friend Gary Whitta.
This is huge news.
Yeah, I got like double Gary Whitta news because in addition to Comic-Con coming up, you had Star Wars Celebration this past weekend.
Star Wars Celebration Europe.
Europe. Star Wars, yeah. So there's only one Star Wars Celebration sometimes every year, sometimes every other year, but they did one last year in Anaheim before The Force Awakens, and this year is in Europe. Next year it's in Orlando, Florida. And this year, the big thing, there are two things they're really excited to promote, and one, of course, is Rogue One, which Gary wrote or co-wrote and worked on. And then two, and for people who don't know, of course, Gary, it was one of the founding members of the Test. This is only a Test podcast. He recorded at least 100, 150 episodes with us in the first couple of years, did our first two October casts together. He's a screenwriter, lives in San Francisco, and he wrote, worked on Rogue One with Gareth Edwards. So that was a big deal.
Let's pause on that because I think we're going to come back and talk about the Rogue One reel.
We will. The other news, of course, is that, he also worked on Star Wars Rebels this new season. So that was great for him. And then he got a new movie deal announced just this past Monday. And I'm super excited for this because it's a comic book series published by Boom Studios that I've loved for a long time. That has a really hardcore, dedicated fan following. And that's Mouse Guard.
Yeah, that's incredible news. I sort of, when I saw the news, I was like, how are they going to adapt that into a movie?
Well,
like,
I was so excited because, Mouse Guard, for people who don't know, is written a comic written by, it's really a graphic novel, not in the traditional comic book format. You kind of buy it in these, it's more like a landscape orientation as opposed to portrait orientation comic, thick volumes. David Peterson is the artist, and it is kind of like Shakespearean era, Three Musketeers, but with animals, creatures. So... not Tail Despero, not that.
Mostly mammals.
So the Mouse Guard, they wear capes, they have swords, they are very noble, and they have a whole landscape and like world. The world that it's built for this graphic novel is expansive. And what was announced with the movie is, one, Gary's writing it, the adaptation, but two, it's going to be directed by Matt Reeves.
Oh, that's great. That's a great pickup for it.
Matt Reeves, because it's Fox is the studio that's going to be producing and distributing it. But Matt Reeves directed Cloverfield, which now that's not really tied to Mouse Guard. But he also did the two most recent Planet of the Apes movies, and the third one coming out, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I'm not sure which one. I think it's Dawn first and then Rise. No, Rise and then Dawn. That's what it is. Rise and then Dawn. So it's going to be, apparently Mouse Guard will be a mix of live action and CG mice.
And so I had no idea. Was Gary a fan of Mouse Guard, just like
I believe
you
he
are?
Was. Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's how it, like, oh, so yeah. This is just like a personal project almost for him.
Yeah, we had a friend, Logan Decker, when we both worked at PC Gamer, who was like the huge, biggest Mouse Guard fan. And like we were all kind of like big fans of it. Like, with the style, it's very elegant writing, very poetic, and like the art is beautiful.
I'm really excited about that. All right, back to Star Wars Celebration.
Back to Star Wars Celebration, as you guys probably have expected. It's a lot of pop culture news this week. So
there isn't a ton of tech news.
That's right.
And
that's all right.
And we should have mentioned this on the top. Sorry for the construction noise that is happening in the background from time to time. Really?
They can't hear it.
Oh, then it's like just
don't,
in my
just
head.
Don't acknowledge it.
Are we supposed to do that with the pigeons that are like having sex on the stoop too?
Don't acknowledge them.
Okay.
If you look at them, they'll have your power.
And there are no bricks that are vertical either.
That's right.
No,
none.
Doesn't exist.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
So Rogue One, the movie's coming out December, and at Celebration they showed. So there's been a first teaser trailer already, and at Celebration they showed the behind the scenes. Real, the making of real, which is something for The Force Awakens very well received. They did the same thing, but they showed it off at Comic-Con.
So if you don't want to hear anything about this, if you're like Joey and you can't hear anything about trailers or anything, stop listening for about 2.5 minutes.
That's right. Yeah. And what was shown, it's a kind of this fast-paced cut of the production, a lot of new characters, a lot of homage to the original, to things from the original trilogy, because this is before A New Hope. So you have variations of stormtroopers. You have variations of droids that we're familiar with. Some characters that may look like calamari, Mon Calamari.
Definitely diversity in the Akbar clan, let's just say.
Yep. And the landscapes that they're, the environments that this battle is supposed to take place in. It's both, there's desert planets and tropical planets.
Yeah, forest and jungle-like endeavors.
They're like... stormtroopers wading in blue water.
I thought that was the one that stuck out to me the most. That's the image I'm going to remember. The four stormtroopers like wading through the little blue.
I feel like it could be golden. It could look a little more dirty. Maybe in post. I mean, that was a behind the scenes shot. But like, I'm sure in the.
I don't know, like, because the bad, I'm forgetting his name right now. In the white, the Imperial bad, mm-hmm. he's. Spectacularly clean, clad in white. And I wonder if they're just going to make all Imperial, the Imperial Force level is just impeccable in this. That might just be like this kind of interesting take on them. Whereas we in Force Awakens, we got a slightly grittier view of you know.
So the Rebels would be grungier.
Yeah.
The Rebellion's grungier. Huh.
I wonder if that's the direction they're going to go.
And just like at Celebration last year, a lot of the costumes and a lot of the maquettes that were used to give the visual artists design inspiration were on display. So you had all these characters, the band of Rebels who steal the Death Star plans, their costumes on display, and the new TIE fighters, the new Imperial shuttle ships, all that stuff.
There are so many aliens that pop up right near the end that is going to take, you know, weeks of dissection to look at them still frame each one. But the one piece that stuck out to me was the behind-the-scenes cockpit scene where you see it on all these actuators moving around in a firefight. I'm so curious about, like, A, what kind of ship that is.
Right.
B, just like how complicated, like there was literally like a dozen plus actuators underneath that thing, shifting it around. Like the degrees of motion was pretty complicated.
Gimbaled cockpits we're talking about for believability. So like actors don't have to just, you know, tilt and
oh, poor Riker.
grab their chairs as the camera turns and pivots. They're on gimbaled sets that get to shake and rumble and turn, and then with actual projection, front projection screens, so they can see the VFX of what's visualized in the action. Like, that's awesome. There's a great shot, speaking of cockpit shots, I hope they did this for everyone, a camera looking inward into the cockpit as the actors got into the cockpit, and there's a one TIE fighter pilot who gets in. He has a mustache. He's just smiling. The pure joy he has in being in that cockpit, I think, just exemplifies the feeling that the Star Trek fans or Star Wars fans have of watching this footage. Other things announced at Star Wars Celebration. New Han Solo did his first interview on stage.
How do you pronounce his name? Alden Ehrenreich?
Ehrenreich.
Okay.
Ehrenreich.
So what else has he been in? Like, is there
his
a place?
His first movie, I think his only film, maybe the recent Coen Brothers film *Hail Caesar*.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Have you?
Did I? I enjoyed it. I think it's not the best Coen work. There's great moments in it, great dance.
That's
pieces.
A high bar. Best Coen work. Yeah.
I mean, I think they got what they wanted out of it. It's really funny. But he is one of the best parts of it. He plays a cowboy, an actor who's a
perfect and cowboy is the kind of oeuvre I want for Han Solo.
But he has
like
a really
bit.
Distinct accent in the like a drawl. In *Hail Caesar*, and so it's not like the vocal accent. Vocally, it's not the same character at all. But he does.
You gotta think they're gonna try to correct that.
Yes, and that's just an act. That was him acting in *Hail Caesar*. But like, he has that grin, the devilish grin, and I think it's a good it's good casting. And then I have more faith in the writing. Like the more known qualities are the writers and the directors. So Phil Lord, Chris Miller, who did 21 Jump Street, Lego, which had Lego, the Lego movie, which also had Han Solo, are directing the Han Solo film, and they're amazingly talented directors. And the writers are Lawrence Kasdan and his son.
You can't argue with that.
So it's, I mean, they get the character. I think they'll get the characters. And it's more about like whether they, as with all these films, whether they want to, how the balance of fan service and telling an original story.
So a thing came up that is associated to this that we talked about on the podcast months ago. There will be no crawl for these Star Wars stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which
they're
I think
it's going to
be controversial.
Right. We thought there would be a crawl.
Yeah. How could it be Star Wars without it?
Because there's crawls on anything that's even remotely canonical for Star Wars, from Lego to the ILM VFX demo to all the, you know, everything Lucas has put out. Like Rebel Assault had a crawl. Yeah, very interesting.
Does it bother you that it won't have a crawl?
No, absolutely not.
I have to get over it. I need another day or so to mourn the crawl. Then I'll be fine.
Let the cold open be something else.
No, I said this, like, I think the last time we talked about this. I want this to be a breeding ground for experimentation, for different styles, different genres that they sort of fit this movie into.
If it's
so,
a breeding ground, you can't have protection.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't play it safe.
Yeah, so the crawl probably, you know, as long as the score is up to Star Wars quality. I think the not having the crawl won't bother me.
So I will say this. I don't think you'll need the crawl, but will it start off with John Williams? That's a bigger thing to me. The Star Wars logo with John Williams score. Will it start with that? Or is that just tied inextricably to the core or the crawl?
I kind of want the shot from space of some sort of planet before coming down, too.
You can have that, but we'll need... Bum.
It needs something because the Lucasfilm like little jingle is not enough for me. All right. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. We have one more piece of news that came out of Celebration.
Yes.
And it's the return to the canon of one of my favorite Star Wars characters.
All right. So you obviously read the Timothy Zahn books, the EU books that are no longer canon. But again, spoilers for people who watch Star Wars Rebels. General Thrawn.
Yeah, Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Grand Admiral, sorry.
Is returning to the universe. And Timothy Zahn first originated this character in the early 90s in a series of books. And, you know, I was in high school and I read these books and it was perfect YA books. I encourage people to go back and read them if you want, but especially if you're in that YA category. I loved him because I always thought the Imperial forces in the Star Wars films were underdeveloped, especially like Piet was the one that we got the most out of. And all Piet did was like run away from the bridge. And when a A-wing came to crash and then, you know, watched a bunch of people get choked out. Right. Like,
right.
So I always felt like all of the militaristic structure was underdeveloped. Thrawn filled that out for me. He was a character that was a brilliant strategic mind that brought the non-magical side of the Imperium to the fore
on the high end in the management side.
Yeah,
not in the grunt side.
He didn't start as a Grand Admiral. I mean, he worked his way up. He's also an alien character, so it introduced like a different race into the universe. And the story is brilliant, and so I'm excited to see him return. It's not going to return with the Zahn stories at all, which were, you know, involved like Luke Skywalker and other pieces. So I don't think that's what we're going to see in Rebels at all.
We'll talk a little bit about Star Trek, but is this kind of like the Star Wars equivalent of the reboot where people have these fond memories and have these associations with characteristics of the character that they have expectations for and will be disappointed if they don't tag in a certain plot points or storylines?
I'm sure. I mean, it's Star Wars, so you're going to get that. There's going to be disappointment if it doesn't live up to all of these things. I'll only be disappointed if they introduce Thrawn not as a brilliant tactician.
Okay.
That's all I'm looking for. I'm not looking for like a cadence or anything else like that. I mean, he was kind of even keeled in the book. So, and that sort of coldness amplified his intimidation factor. But outside of that, I want a smart admiral for once in that universe, and I think we're gonna get that.
It's a great week for nostalgia outside of Star Wars Celebration. Wait. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, great week for nostalgia for fans of old cartoons, new, relatively old, and even older cartoons. Futurama, you're a huge fan, I know.
Massive fan of Futurama.
Massive fan. There was a Futurama fan film that was announced.
Yeah, so I saw a text of this coming across my Twitter, and I almost dropped my phone out of excitement. That I'm like, oh, a live-action Futurama fan film is in the works.
That's right.
None of these, like, ridiculous 10 rules set down from Fox Studios that I know about limit their production. Like, go nuts. And, you know, given what we've seen from Frankwick creating like Zoidberg and Farnsworth, mm-hmm. I was like, I had it in my mind what it would look like.
Yes.
And then I clicked the link.
Yep.
And looked on IO9.
Uh-huh. And they said it described it as both impressive and creepy.
Yeah, I would say creepy and impressive. Yeah, I would go in the other order.
Okay,
things.
But those, you like, tick both those boxes, but in other order.
So, I mean, you see Farnsworth, you see Leela, you see Fry, and it's sort of jarring to see them in real life, just like when we saw The Simpsons go like that 3D mm-hmm. episode years ago.
Yeah.
A little jarring, but I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And so that was the impressive part.
I mean,
the creepy part is that it just is weirdly acted, and like Zoidberg does his like whoop 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 whoop, and it's just on the wrong note totally.
Yeah, I agree with the creepy part, because these are characters we're not accustomed to seeing just proportionally in the real world. I mean, it's why Frank Farnsworth and Frank Zoidberg were creepy. They were, and why he had to change his Zoidberg paint job to make it a little more cartoonish than the kind of crustacean paint job he had originally gone with. Because, like, cartoon characters don't necessarily translate to real people. And yet, and so much of Futurama, and because this is a teaser, so much of it is in the comedy and the story. That's what I think people love about Futurama. Like, I'm hoping that at least this will maybe get that spirit right again. But I would say impressive and then creepy, because impressive because like they put on a full production with a build of a interior of the Planet Express ship, the Planet Express the home base. They have
like the break room.
The break room is built out, and I will also say that we did visit the set of this production and got to see all this stuff up close, and we got some exclusive behind-the-scenes footage. So regardless of how good this turns out to be, the fabrication and the work put into the production, I think, is a wonderful thing. And we'll be sharing that as the film gets closer to release.
Okay, so I give you impressive on those grounds, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a little bit cynical about this one, because
you may absolutely.
I don't know if it's not going to me, unless it had that writing team, I think the magic won't be there.
Right.
Because there was something really special about what they did together. And I'm assuming David X. Cohen did not write this fan film. Okay.
Yeah. I'm happy to let it exist as an exercise of adaptation. Those things always fascinate me.
Okay. Well, we've talked about Star Wars, Futurama. That only leaves one sort of space opera worth talking about.
Yep. Master of Universe.
He-Man's back.
He-Man is back. Wow.
That's He-Man. So weird.
That's
Did you see the
say.
Trailer?
I didn't. No. What is this?
So they're premiering the first new episode of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe at Comic-Con. The first one in like 30 years almost, 20 some years, and they released a trailer for it with like Skeletor walking up to Castle Grayskull. It's hokey, just like the original series. We don't see He-Man or Battle Cat or, you know, Man at Arms, anyone. Tila. Yeah, that's right. I'm just name dropping He-Man characters now.
So
Evil-Lyn.
It looks like this was produced in partnership with Super 7.
Yeah, so you get that iconic like Super 7 at the beginning of the trailer, which I loved. Like, that was worth it to me. The
but
rest
Super
of the 7, trailer.
Super 7's the toy company.
I know,
it's
but
the
they
toy store.
But they always had the that little like crawl, that noise before He-Man.
You know, we can get to the bottom of this because there's a Super 7 store like in our neighborhood.
Oh, really?
I would say within walking distance, we could find go to the Super 7 and get some answers.
Yeah, my complaint about this is it looks too good. Like,
it looks too polished.
The animation looks too nice in the trailer.
Now, they didn't modernize it. It's still the proportions and everything looks like
yeah, but the character doesn't go from like this side of the frame to the other side
right,
of the frame
right.
immediately. It's
very,
like smoothed out.
They used current technology to get more than three quarters framing on these characters.
Okay, well, that's not the space opera I was referring to mentioned it.
Okay.
I was talking about the Star Trek space opera.
All right, we're gonna end the pop culture segment with two notes on Star Trek. Which would you like? Let's talk about the TV show first.
Yeah, let's say the new TV show that's streaming on CBS's new service.
Yes, yeah, so CBS has a service. It's an existing service, actually, called All Access. And it's where you can, it's like their Netflix competitor. You can pay the fee per month and get access to all of CBS's programming if you want to. But Star Trek will be the flagship show that they're producing that will be exclusive on the series. So Star Trek will actually come back to television because the first episode, the pilot, is going to be on CBS. But that's a really weird thing to do, to say like it's like you could think of it both ways. If the company is too backward, then they could feel like they don't have enough confidence in Star Trek as a brand to put it on broadcast television and get the ad money for that. Or if you could think the other way, and CBS is very forward-thinking, and they feel like digital is the future, and they really want to put a stake in the digital VOD, video on demand, then and they're putting their jewel, the crown jewel of CBS, into All Access.
I don't think it's that weird. I mean, we talk so much on the show about shows that we watch exclusively video on demand, whether it's Netflix, Amazon, whatever. So it being hosted in that location, not that weird.
But
I still don't think Star Trek is as mainstream as like NCIS.
Right, of course.
Like it's been like what, more than a decade since there's been a Star Trek show on TV, and even then, it how many decades has it been since Star Trek was on a major network?
I agree, and it really feels like when you produce a show for digital only, you can do a show that's more serialized. Or maybe a show that does not have to go, not be procedural, essentially. And you can do shows that find its audience, that will pay for it. And those shows have been great on Netflix. And so I hopefully those. There are networks, and maybe CBS doesn't have like an FX arm, because you think of like FX and shows like American Horror Story, which have been great on cable, or even Fargo. Like I would love Star Trek to be like that.
I totally agree. But I think that tease of that first episode is just sort of the nod to the history on that network. It is less about getting people from one service to the other.
Okay.
I'm not.
You don't think it's going to get people to subscribe?
I don't.
I think it's going to be one of the most highly pirated shows in the U.S.
I agree with that, too.
I say in the U.S. because the news that came out this week was that even though it'll be on CBS All Access in the U.S., internationally, Netflix is the distributor. Now, good for Star Trek and CBS to get the money from Netflix to get international distribution, and great for people who live outside the U.S. people watch that show and build up, bolster their Netflix catalog. But kind of sucks for me already paying for HBO and Netflix to have to pay to watch it. I would watch ads with this. I would watch on. I have a Hulu subscription. I'd pay to watch it on Hulu.
I agree. You know, and the most likely way I'm going to watch this is if it ends up on like an iTunes type thing where I can pay per episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like paying for the All Access subscription, just like I don't watch anything else on CBS.
That's right. And the question is whether they're going to do it all at once.
I hope so. I feel like even though I think it's unlikely that we're going to get a fully serialized story like you suggest, you might as well drop it all at once and just to be consistent with everything else.
I don't watch a lot of Amazon exclusive shows like Transparent, which I should watch because it's supposed to be very good. But does that all come at once?
Mm-hmm, for the most part. There's been a couple shows that release, like Hulu is the only one that I've noticed that has been releasing weekly for some of their original content. Like they bought up the Mindy Kaling show, Mindy Project, and they release that weekly in some like casual and not catastrophe. There's one other one. They've been releasing like that. But for the most part, Netflix and Amazon, and there it is.
All right. Well, what are your hopes for the Star Trek? I guess the other thing we forgot to mention is one of the reasons I'm so excited about this show, and there's so many questions about casting and what time period it's going to be in, whether it will be in the J.J. Abrams Kelvin universe timeline or Brian Fuller's doing the show. He's show running the show, and that makes me super excited.
Yeah, it's super excited, especially for the visuals. We talked about his work on Pushing Daisies on a previous podcast. Love the visual and storytelling in that show. Really novel. And I think he can bring that. Star Trek is a really bright, vibrant universe. And I think Brian Fuller is just an incredible choice for the show. So I have really high hopes. Brian Fuller's shows, especially Pushing Daisies, had a little darkness to them, too.
Yeah.
Which I think is well suited to the Star Trek universe. So, you know, I'm definitely going to. I'm all excited. I definitely have a very low expectation, though. After, you know, Enterprise, Voyager, DS9, even TNG, all of them took a long time to get ramped up. And in the case of Enterprise, never got anywhere. So
that was just a holodeck simulation.
Yeah, I have a long lead time for when I expect this to get anywhere.
Well, I hope maybe there'll be something at Comic-Con. They're doing a bunch of 50th anniversary Star Trek celebrations at Comic-Con. There will be a big panel, I think, with Brian Fuller, and hopefully they'll have some announcements there. But also this Friday, tomorrow, tonight for some people, right now for some people in the world, Star Trek Beyond is out. And
Two Trek, Two Furious.
No.
No.
Because, first of all, Justin Lin didn't direct Too Fast, Too Furious. He did Tokyo Drift. So if anything, it's Star Trek, like...
Enterprise Drift.
Enterprise Drift or Tesseract Drift or something. I don't know. But it is the third movie in this J.J. Abrams reboot. I saw it last night.
Okay. So, I mean, no spoilers.
No spoilers.
Obviously. But let's agree, first Abrams movie was promising.
I love the first one.
Yeah, I thought it was great, especially the ending was really satisfying.
Eminently rewatchable. The beginning was satisfying. I cry every time.
Bones, especially Carl Urban, was really great.
Mm-hmm. Cast chemistry.
Second one took
second
a dip.
Second one had a little, I think, rough. I think the script was rushed. I think they tried too far. I think what I love about the second one is they answered the issue that a lot of people had with the first one of why did James T. Kirk deserve the captain's chair? And I think he earned the captain's chair in the second film, and they tackled the idea of what does it mean to be a captain.
Sure, too many nods to me, to the backward, and then Cumberbatch just wasn't, you know,
miscast. If you're going to use him, don't use him as Khan. And if they're going to do Khan, if they need to do, yeah, they could have used him as second character. I think they fell into the trap of too much fan service.
Yeah.
And by needing to do Khan as an iconic villain.
So we're kind of in agreement there.
Absolutely.
Where does this one go?
This one, I think, is not as great and groundbreaking as the first one, but is far better than the second one.
That's great.
I loved it. I 100% loved it. There are going to be bits and pieces, especially if you have distaste for the trailer, that I think a lot of people are going to think, oh, this doesn't feel like Star Trek. You know, the motorbike scene, which is in the trailer. But I think from end to end, it actually really does feel like Star Trek. It feels like the best case scenario for a long episode of Star Trek in this world with these actors. Even though they changed directors, the consistency in the set design, in the chemistry of the crew holds so well together.
That's what I was wondering about, because I thought that was the best legacy of the second film, is I really felt like that cast was together.
Yeah.
Like I really enjoyed the experience, and still, Simon Pegg as Scotty is just one of my favorite things.
I think Chris Pine's like he's so good. He's
really
so good at Kirk. Like, I love Carl Urban, and I love Spock.
His Bones is spot on.
But he never makes it his own, because it is spot on. And like, outside of the first bits of acting, and he gets the character. There's not a lot of range in Bones. He's like always just frustrated, grumbly. And Spock has a little more range, but Kirk, I think, is given the most range, as he should be, as the captain, the most material to work with, and I think Chris Pine nails it. I think the villain's compelling. The action sequences are just the right length without feeling drawn out. Like I said, I was thoroughly pleased.
Well, that blows me away. And there's news about the next film too.
Yeah, it's strange that the news came. I mean, it's not so strange in that they want to promote awareness of Star Trek and the fact that the movie's coming out. But J.J. Abrams, in an interview with, I believe, Entertainment Tonight, announced that Paramount has signed on for a fourth film, which is like the best thing that can happen out of this. Because if we get four films, then I'm happy with this universe. They can close off the universe. I know actors don't want to commit to more than a decade playing a single role. We only have four Bond Craig films, and not all of them. And like, two of them are good and two of them are crap.
Yeah, that's about
and
right.
If we end up with four Star Trek films in 3 years from now,
and three are great,
then they're better than Bond.
The one bit of news that also came out is that Chris Hemsworth is going to be returning in that film.
Oh, I didn't want to go into that deep of a spoilers here.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we'll say it right there. J.J. Abrams confirmed.
Thor is entering the Star Trek universe.
That's right.
That's what's happening.
The Asgardian race will take on Enterprise. All that science will be magic. They're gonna teleport onto the Bifrost. Now, I think this is a plot point that one could only have happened because Chris Hemsworth is now a superstar, and he wasn't when the first film was cast and directed.
All right. I think I'm going to play the music before I spoil anything else.
All right. That music cue.
Let's get to tech news.
All right. We're not going to discuss the plot points, the nitty-gritty. Theories are already going through my head and how they can make this work.
No.
So many theories.
I know I'm going to.
People want
to
say Mirror Universe. I think Mirror Universe is a bad idea. People want to say it's the Nexus, like in Star Trek Generations. He was caught in a singularity. He has not aged. So as opposed to the ship traveling back in time, it's him going to the...
I just want some Andorian action. Love those Andorians.
Jerks.
I know. That's why I like them. They'll drive the plot.
All right. Technology news. Do we have a music intro for this or no?
No.
No. All right. Technology news. Let's run through this stuff. Windows 10. Windows 10 is going to miss its billion device target that Microsoft had set out.
And this target was set for like 2018 or something like that. And but the big news, I think, associated with them missing this target is sort of twofold. One is that their projections on getting on mobile devices are going to be way off base right now. And two, and I think the more short-term thing, is they were supposed to hit like 350 million devices with the Windows 10 upgrade, and they are well short of that. And sales on Windows 10 has not been good. So that whole, like, we're going to get this incredible penetration of Windows 10 with this free upgrade has not come to fruition. And what are we, like, 2-3 days away from when that's supposed to end?
Now, is there any chance they would extend that?
I think there's a big chance of extending it now that we got this news. But I'm not sure that's going to make a huge difference.
No.
So disappointing news there.
But people have been happy with Windows 10.
It's fine. Totally it's like fine. I held out for a long time, but I finally made the switch. But it's also there's nothing in Windows 10 that made me leap towards.
What about the anniversary update?
The anniversary update.
New Windows 10 update. The anniversary update. The one that's coming this summer, available on August 2nd.
Oh, what? I don't even know what's in there.
What? So I think. The anniversary update is what Microsoft is hoping to be, like the SP2. You know, like Windows XP. Yeah. SP2 was what made it. Like that's the one everyone wanted to install. And so we are. I mean, it's tough to believe we are over a year in. Well over a year into Windows 10. Almost over a year into Windows 10 now. So new features. I think we've capped. We've talked about stuff before. You know, security features. There's Windows Ink. So for drawing, better pen support, which I think they'll need, and a lot of Cortana stuff, which I know we've been lukewarm with. But when anniversary update, I think that hopefully will.
Have they announced what's going to be inside this update?
Yeah. Build this year, they did all big panels about it.
Oh, yeah. I missed that.
All right. Well, you were not on Windows 10, not on board.
I was holding out still. Maybe that's
why. You're holding out for that Windows, that Xbox One.
When is the new slim down model coming out?
Same date, August 2nd, big day for
Microsoft.
Are
you gonna get it?
No.
Yeah, neither one.
I don't have a 4K TV. I have an Xbox One. I wanted what I was looking forward to is the PlayStation, the new PlayStation, which still has not yet been announced. So before I think about getting a PS4 for PSVR, I'm gonna hold out for any Sony news in case they do like a PSVR plus Neo bundle. When that comes out.
A few weeks out, I still don't have any clarity why they're expanding the number of SKUs in the Xbox universe. It still doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
I think they're phasing out the full-size Xbox. And
I know that's coming, but right now they're carrying, what, like 3 SKUs?
Something like that. They're really trying to get rid of inventory. Like
yeah.
Bundling in if you buy a Surface. They want to get, again, the consoles... as expensive as they are still basically sold at cost so that they make the money off of games, mm-hmm. you know, digital games and the $60 games. There is a new console. There was a new console announced this past week from Nintendo. And surprise, it's the NES.
Oh, that is a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah. Nintendo announced the NES console comes back this holiday, $60, 30 games bundled.
$60?
$60.
Oh.
The NES.
I totally might get that. Are they releasing it with like a big lineup?
30 games.
30 games is pretty good.
Built in. You pay $60, you get all 30 games. The games list, I don't have
it. Oh, we got to look at the games list. This is what matters.
This is
And this isn't Super NES. No, just this straight is NES. NES,
which you can buy those games right now, I think, in the Wii store for like $5 a pop. So it's the Nintendo Classic Edition, NES Classic Edition is what they're calling it. And it comes with one controller. You do need to buy a second controller, and they're not USB. It's still proprietary.
It's still plug. That weird plug. It's
a weird plug with the hook on it. $60, including all three Super Mario Brothers, Metroid, Tecmo Bowl, Legend of Zelda, Excitebike. But it doesn't have a few things like no Double Dribble, RC Pro-Am, no Contra. I think that's a little bit of a disappointment. No Tecmo Bowl.
Did you say any of the Zelda games?
Zelda's in there.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So I think it's a great. I think it's going to sell like gangbusters.
I think. I wish it was 50, just because it's a nice round number,
and then you can buy the controller.
Yeah, and I can introduce my kid to that world of games that I grew up on.
Right. I mean, I think the idea that like. Kids are buying games on their phones. They're playing games on their phones. This is a nice way to play a non-connected game on your TV. It's going to have the right ports. It's going to be perfectly emulated, which that's going to be important.
It's perfect for Christmas. It's going to have like a short run, just like I think Pokemon's going to.
The controller that comes with will still work with your Wii, because you can plug into it's the same port that plugs into the Wii U controller, the nunchuck that plugs in.
Yeah, but is it going to hurt your hand after you play it for a while?
Yes,
like old
of
school?
Course. Yeah. You're going to need like sand off the edges on the bottom corners. The second controller, I'm not sure exactly how much. So the 30 games, Pac-Man, Ninja Gaiden, Mega Man 2.
Oh, that's a good game. I like that game.
Ice Climber, Kid Icarus, Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr., Dr. Mario. Like these are great games. Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2.
Oh, like, that's great.
Yeah, $60, totally worth it. They need to make sure these are in good supply.
We might need to test this one, Norm.
I agree.
List.
Yeah, yes, I will definitely put it on the list of things to test. Now, back to smartphones. In the smartphone world, big deals happen. From the business side, ARM.
Now, we usually don't talk about like business economic dealings on this podcast, and we won't make a huge deal of this, but ARM was sold to a Japanese company for $31 billion. And that's a ton of money. But beyond the fact of that, like what? Why? Why was this? Is this an Internet of Things play, which is what it feels like to me, is that there's a lot of companies betting on ARM proliferation because of that. That's the only thing that makes sense to me, because haven't we reached saturation with smartphones? I mean, I know ARM sales are going to keep going well through that smartphone device, but that's not really growth. I think this is an Internet of Shit kind of thing.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit sad for me. I also don't know what it means about is this going to speed or slow ARM integration?
ARM development.
Yeah, and ARM development. I don't know. I think this is one of those like big behind-the-scenes stories that we're going to have to explore a lot further. This broke like literally the day before we were recording.
And the
this.
Implications we're not going to feel for a little while.
Not for a long time. I don't think the sale is even approved yet, that kind of level. But I think that's interesting. On still on the smartphone circuit, the final version of Android Nougat Developer Edition is out. Nougat, yes. I played with it a little bit. Not dramatic changes from when I put the developer preview on my phone during a podcast a month ago.
And have you been since then using things like split screen?
Split screen I've used in a couple apps. It hasn't reached like ubiquity yet where I'm just using it all the time, but have definitely used it for stuff like when I'm making have a Google Doc open and have a website open at the same time, and switching back and forth between that has been a little bit of a time saver, but not dramatically so. And I think the only reason I've been able to split screen is I have a 6P. So I have this giant screen already to do it. I have a harder time seeing split screen being functional on the wide majority of Android devices that are on the market. So if you have like a Samsung, 7, if you have any of the Note series, anything like that, sure, split screen is going to be great.
Yep, big enough.
But it's really, I think the biggest improvement in Nougat is very subtle. It's the notification bar is a ton better. I really enjoyed the seamlessness of it. It feels more like an Apple notification bar now, because Android's always had, I feel like, a really clunky notification tray. And I think there is some cleaning up of that that came through that.
Is this notification tray or is it the pop the lock screen notification?
Both. Okay. And, you know, some of it is just design and sort of style components. It's really the tray that I think you'll see the biggest differences in. Other Android news. I guess I'm the only Android person left here.
No,
so
I have an Android phone, new Android phone I've been using.
Oh, really? We'll talk about that later.
And what we've been testing.
I think this is actually great news for those that travel. Yeah. It's that Amazon Video is now going to let you download movies and shows, if you Prime movies and shows, to an SD card
on
an Android device for offline viewing.
Okay.
And you can, it's not defined by just the SD card in your device at that time. You can swap in other SD cards. So you can take your whole library.
Holy crap.
That's incredible,
and it
right?
Authenticates and when you log into your subscription.
I haven't tried it. I don't think it's released yet. I'm not sure if it's open yet. I just got a Fire tablet from Prime Day that I'm going to try it out with.
Things like this are exactly the type of features that competing services that have overlapping content need, because I've been doing a lot of traveling, and I hate like the preload process of getting my media, because I don't download, I don't buy on iTunes because I just use Netflix, and but I have Prime and I have Amazon Video, so I want people to put these videos somewhere for flights when I won't have Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is a great play if you travel a lot, or just road trips, even anywhere that you just don't have reliable access. I think it's an incredible value. Right now, the way I do it is basically I take my library and use like a Plex Pass for that sort of online thing, but I have to pay a monthly subscription for it.
Right.
I'm already paying for Amazon Prime, so I think that's a wonderful feature. I hope it gets used a lot, and I think it won't have a ton of penetration just because it's Android only, and so all of those iPad users can be left in the cold. But haha, that's what I have to say. That
yeah, you can spend $50 on a cheap Android tablet.
I think, yeah, sure. Well, let's skip the next one and just go right to.
Well, one last thing I want to say is in order for this to work, they need to make sure the process is super smooth, where you can just checkbox, and say download device or entire seasons, because that's what people do when they travel. They click, okay, I have an X hour flight, I'm going to download 5 episodes and watch them sequentially.
Agreed. And the Amazon Prime Video app, at least on non Amazon devices, has not been good.
All right. Let's thank our sponsor again.
This Is Only a Test is supported by Citi Cards with Android Pay. How cool is it that we live in a world where you can use the same device to listen to This Is Only a Test and buy your morning coffee, groceries, and more? And did I mention it's a super fast way to pay? Just use your Citi Card with Android Pay at the register. Get in, get it, get going. Download the Android Pay app on Google Play or visit citi.com/AndroidPay to get started. Android Pay is available for eligible Citi consumer credit and debit cards.
It's that time. Now it's time for a moment of science. No, I'm not going to overload it. We went heavy on pop culture this week. I'm going to take it easy on science.
All right.
We're going to go out to space. You are a photography enthusiast.
I am.
So this week, NASA's mission to the Juno mission that went to Jupiter actually created open source. You can have the raw image files.
Ooh.
From the lander itself. And I was initially
uncompressed.
Well, they zip them up for download, but right. They're uncompressed image files. And you can get the first sets and play around with them. I love that NASA is doing this. Now, I'm not like a huge Lightroom, you know, play with raw image photos. Would you ever do this? I mean, assuming you had time that doesn't exist in this universe. I think there's a cool
I'm really curious to see what the quality, because just saying raw doesn't mean that there's, I mean, yes, there'll be more data than a compressed JPEG, but it all depends on what the source image and that source sensor is and what spectrum they were taking a photo in, what filters. So I'm definitely curious about what it would look like.
I think there's going to be a lot of people applying filters and different post-processing to the images, and I think we'll even get more spectacular views of Jupiter from people mucking with the raw image files. I just love that NASA did this. Another thing that NASA is doing coming up is in celebration of Star Trek's 50th anniversary, they're having what's called a NASA social that's all Star Trek theme at the Goddard Space Center in Washington, D.C. Now, they've been doing these NASA socials for a while. These are sort of like tweet-up events where like people on social media can come get an insider's view of one of the space centers. And that's been going on for a while, but it's usually been focused on people that are like science journalists or kind of science bloggers in some sort of way. And it's been open to, you know, members of the science enthused public, but they usually try to have people that have some sort of connection to that world. Well, this time they're focusing on how Star Trek and the science fiction of that universe has its connections to real life missions at NASA. And I love that they're doing this in conjunction with the 50th anniversary. I think this is great. It's a 2-day event. I think it's already sold out, but it's happening July 29th and 30th at Goddard. Kudos for NASA for doing this. I always love those intermingling of science fiction and science, and for NASA to sort of put their stamp on it is wonderful.
Good. Lots of stars present for that and people tied to Star Trek.
Yeah.
Oh, Dave Lavery's going to be there.
Yeah, it's a great lineup. And Dave was just did the HoloLens demo for you guys.
Yes, he's become a good friend of the site.
That's great. Keeping it up in space.
Yep.
I mean, it's sort of trite right now.
Keeping it up and then coming back down and sticking that landing.
Yeah, shrug my shoulders. Whatever. The SpaceX just landed Falcon 9, Falcon again. This time on ground. No big deal. It's become passé that they can land the rocket back down. So this time it was a ground-based one. And, you know, you can watch the video. Elon Musk tweeted out stuff. It's why he's the best late-night follow on Twitter, as Will has said so many times. Incredible. The biggest news that came out of it, though, is post the landing, which is great because they talked about reuse right away. They announced that this fall, the rocket that landed on April 9th is going to be reused on a launch.
They're not going to put it in storage.
They announce which one is going to go up, and it's ready. It's ready to go as a fall. No official date, but they said this fall it's going. So we have we're a step closer. That is going to be a big deal. The other one and the launch that I'm going to like set aside time to pay attention to is this fall also brings the Heavy. The Falcon 9 Heavy launch. That's the three rockets strapped together.
Yep.
That's a launch that I don't think you should miss, and watch the webcast for sure, because that is a new frontier for sure. And that's it for a moment of science. Oh, you know what time it is.
It is.
The VR Minute. Virtual reality this week.
All right, a bunch of VR news out this week. First of all, Oculus 1.6 is out, and what people on YouTube are already showing is that you can use up to 4 camera sensors with this. This is huge. A lot of questions were, of course, with Oculus, whether with the touch controllers, which will come with the second camera sensor, whether you'll be able to use room scale, which a lot of people have demonstrated, developers have demonstrated. Basically, yes. You get those camera sensors, if you're long enough, USB 3 cord on opposite sides of the room, occlusion, your body will vary depending on, your occlusion will vary depending on your body, but, and your positioning, but with 4 cameras, one in each corner of your room, that's a lot more coverage.
So I always thought we were talking about room scale at Oculus at just 2 sensors, and it wasn't going to be great. Do you feel like 4 is going to be necessary to get good room scale?
I don't think they'll be necessary, but I think there'll be a lot of people who are going to be eager to have it just to get maximum coverage.
So the natural follow-up question, hey, Norm, do you have 4 sensors?
I don't have 4 sensors.
We got to test this out.
We totally are going to test this out. Now, the one disadvantage, of course, is if you're doing a single shared room, with multiple people, which isn't a common use case. But a lot of people are, you know, they want to do multiplayer VR in the same space, not over over LAN as opposed to over Wi-Fi. And they in the Steam VR camp, you can use two base stations, and you can, with two base stations, which will give you adequate coverage, great coverage, you can have plenty of VR headsets. With the Oculus setup, even if you use four camera sensors, that's only going to track one user. And so you need to have multiple setups of that. That's a lot of camera sensors.
The advantage I always thought with the Oculus setup is that it's going to be so much faster than the Vive setup for that whole room. Is that the case when you have to set up four sensors?
I mean, it's just more USB cable. More USB,
I mean,
ports.
Like, I understand, like, plug it in, but, yeah, like, with all the Lightroom features, it takes a while to get all of that going and set.
No.
Synced. I always thought it took a lot longer than the Oculus.
Oh, no, I'm agreeing. I'm agreeing about that point. I'm saying that with addition, I think it's plug and play. Oculus has made it so easy for plug and play.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So now you have much more of a mobile thing. Like, I could go over to somebody's house and do room scale.
Right.
With the Oculus, a lot easier than with the Vive.
But that cable isn't long enough. And so I hope that the cable for the camera that comes with Touch will be, by default, much longer. And that's been unconfirmed. I don't think it'll be that.
And we don't
case.
Think there's going to be an extender that's going to be able to transmit and keep up.
Oh, you can just buy a USB 3 cable.
Yeah, that's what I would think, too.
But I would also like it to be built in.
Sure.
Especially if I know they probably won't. And because their default setup is two cameras kind of on the same desk looking at you, just front facing. But it would be really nice if they added just another 10 feet to that cable.
Do you want a, like, for the wide majority of users, though, we're still talking about, like, home office, do they want, like, a 20-foot cable on their sensor for
just coil it
that's
up
just gonna
coil it up
coil it up. That's the new deal with it. Coil it up.
Other bits of VR news. Ilum X Lab released their experiment.
This is the one you went and tried out.
Yes,
there's a video up on Tested.
GDC. Well, the video doesn't actually show the demo because they didn't let us film it, but now everyone gets to download it and everyone gets to use it. They also announced that they'll be doing more of these type of experiments with story-based elements. The demo's fine. There's some great sound in there. It's a really short demo experience. The reviews not being great, and, like, again, you're getting free stuff from ILM, so don't complain.
Yeah, it's lightsaber and VR. What am I complaining about?
Yeah, the non-official light swords demo, I think, is more fun because you have dual lightsabers, and that one has more of an objective. But this one is, if you have a HTC Vive, you should absolutely download it and try it. PSVR, which mentioned earlier, it is still coming out in October. There was a little bit of confusion earlier about whether every developers would need to build in DualShock 4 support into every VR game. Now, there's pros and cons of this. Presumably, everyone who has a PS4 has a DualShock 4 controller, and so there's universal compatibility. But to force the developer to build in that type of control, as opposed to designing something that's only going to be motion controlled, feels a lot like when Apple said that Apple TV games needed to use the Apple remote. Now, the DualShock 4 controller is much more capable than the Apple remote, the touchpad on the remote. But I don't want to have that constraint for developers.
Do you think the haptics of having that sort of, like, rumble and all of that kind of stuff is going to be valuable here?
Yeah, absolutely. For some types of experiences, and not only the rumble, but knowing where your hands are. Because the controller is tracked. DS4 is tracked spatially, which is great. But then you have interesting design elements where you know if the hands are going to be holding, gripping the controller in a certain way. You basically get simulated hand presence that way. Because, like, for like the London Heist, what was it, the London Heist one, where they showed you your hands were handcuffed, right? Like, that's an interesting use. Like, there may not be a lot more, but horse riding, your hands are gripping the reins.
I was
close
thinking
together
about
that way,
like racing games, like cockpit games, anything where you're, like, grabbing something is gonna be really interesting. I would love it if there was, like, a sword type game where you get a little bit of, like, the haptic action there too. Just a little bit of force feedback would be great. And when we went to Stanford, they had, like, haptics in the floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this is obviously well short of that. So I can't imagine a number of the launch lineup is going to feature all of this. But I would just I would hope to see it more and more on the PSVR games going forward.
And, you know, I fully believe if PSVR takes off, there's going to be a new version of the hand controllers, the motion controls that we'll build in haptics. And
you think they're going to announce a new version of that?
Not this year.
Not this year, right? No, I think in the future.
It's smart for them to have these cheap $25 controllers be the way to get PSVR into the mass market. But once everyone has a PSVR next year, you know what? They can expect the users to spend another $50, $100, whatever that is. Google has a mixed reality headset. So what was the story about?
So coming off of I.O., we talked about a lot of different components of Daydream. And there were some announcements of, like, job cuts and stuff where it seemed less about elimination, more just about focus. Like, we're going to be focused on Daydream. Now there's word in a couple different reports that Google has been working on a mixed reality AR/VR type headset, which is really exciting because for the longest time, we especially after I.O., we thought that Google is just going to purely be software and something with cardboard. But the idea of a more full-featured headset, that's gonna you know, mess with the entire marketplace. We always thought it was just going to be, you know, Oculus, Vive, maybe Magic Leap, whenever that shows up, and then PSVR. And the idea of, like, Google coming back with something much more full-featured than Gear VR and obviously cardboard, I think is really exciting. These are not entirely confirmed. Google won't comment on these. But if that's true, that they are working on mixed reality, I think that's great news, especially given what we've said and heard about Magic Leap recently.
Mixed reality, I think, is really eventually where we're all going to land.
It's where it's at, I think.
Yeah, in some form or another, whether it's through pass-through camera or through optics, or an actual lens and a different projection system, image projection system. But I would be, I don't think we need to definitely jump there immediately. I think we're still finding out are the right places for mixed reality to work and augmented reality and VR to work, the right context. It's not just about the content. It's about the context of where you use these things. And VR works well because the places your people are mostly going to be using VR are already going to be at their computers. It's a scenario, an environment they're comfortable in. I think using VR in a public space or AR in a public space, we're a long ways from that being accepted.
Sure, but if we don't have multiple hardware iterations on it, we're not going to get there anytime soon. I have one last thing in VR that people should know about. It is, by the time people listen to this, it'll be July 21st, which is really close, just past the anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. And if you haven't tried the Apollo 11 VR experience, there's no better time to do it than right by the anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing. I think, what are we at, 47? Am I doing that math right? 50. 47.
Yes, we're close to 50.
So I think it's a good excuse. It was one of my favorite VR experiences, both educationally, emotionally, and, you know, it's not the best VR experience, like, graphically enough, but I thought storytelling-wise it was great. So do it if you haven't had a moment.
All right. A lot of VR content coming out, which is great. The Assembly is probably the biggest game out. It's a narrative game. It's supposed to be a little bit of a mind screw. So.
Oh, really? Like horror kind of mind screw?
Suspense.
Okay. All right. Is that it for the VR Minute?
Yes, that is.
This week. Hey, what have you guys been testing?
Hey, Norm, what have you been testing?
Well, I got a new Android phone in. This is the Axon 7 from ZTE, a $500 phone. I want to say $500. Let me confirm that. Is there?
You got it in the rose gold.
It's what they sent. It's $400. That's right. $400, 64 gigs with external storage, dual SIM. It's so far been pretty good, pretty fast. Super high resolution screen. It's one of those, again, like the wave of kind of reasonably priced high end phones competing with the OnePlus 3 and Motorola's
stock
phones.
Android on it.
close to, but not extremely, not exactly.
I'm interested, but what you're going to say, external storage?
External storage.
I think that, I mean, that's the big thing that has been missing from the Nexus line of phones. So I'm excited about it. I've never actually owned an Axon ZTE product before. Have you tested one before?
No. They're relatively, they're big in China, but relatively new in the U.S. So this will be the first one.
And it's just compatible with all the carriers,
yep.
Right?
Yep. And taking it to Comic-Con.
Oh, nice. Going to put it through the test?
Yeah.
Are you going to test out the camera down there with it?
Yeah. I think that's a great environment to test out mobile cameras. I'll, of course, be lugging around a big camera as well.
Well, cosplay gallery's got to return, right?
Nope.
What?
No time.
Are you retired?
No, I might be retired. Well, no. I it's always one of those things that I don't know until I get there, and by Thursday I'll know. And you'll know as well.
All right. Fair enough. What's inside?
Do you have an Xbox? No, but you have a PC. So you got to play this game. It's a game from the people who made Limbo.
Oh, okay.
And it came on Xbox first, on PC second. It is technically a puzzle game, puzzle platformer, side-scroller. But to call it like that would be to call... Do you remember when Prince of Persia came out? Not the original Prince of Persia, but the 3D version.
Oh,
back
yeah.
Back in like 2003 or 4 or something. What that did for platformers in terms of like the fluidity.
That's a big statement.
For kind of the side-scroller puzzle game.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't heard the kind of buzz that we heard like about Witness and stuff around this game, though.
It is... The game... I don't describe too much because like every little plot point is a spoiler, and this is truly something that people should experience. It's about a 4-hour game, but it plays like the manifestation of a nightmare. Those type of nightmares where you're being chased.
What?
Yeah. There's surreal aspects. There's like just suspenseful, thrilling aspects. My hands are sweating as I'm playing this. There's some really just disturbing parts of it. But
that's not what I expect from a side-scrolling game at all.
Extremely compelling. It's very dark, very moody. It's all you know, like darkly lit, but beautiful.
Oh, that's
game.
A callback to that one of those mystery games where like the kid disappears. I'm forgetting what that was called. It was like 5 years ago. Anyways, that sounds awesome. What's coming up on Tested this week?
This week, we're at Comic-Con, so our Comic-Con videos will be out in full force. We do have, in addition to Comic-Con videos, all our interviews from the Replica Prop Forum Party, which we were at a week ago. So those have been rolling out. I hope you guys are enjoying that. Some great projects by members of the RPF and members of other prop building communities, like Lost in Space prop building community, some great Star Wars prop builds, a lot of great... car reproductions from the Ecto-1 to the DeLoreans, even the Pizza Planet truck from Pixar films. So that's all on the site. And of course, like I said, Comic-Con interviews and all of our coverage there. So please enjoy that. Kishore, you'll be at Comic-Con, but anything else for you?
No, just my science podcast is going. We have coming up an interview with a former SeaWorld trainer that was in Blackfish. And I think right now we have Hank Greeley, who's a bioethicist from Stanford, talking about emerging technologies that's going to change the way we have sex and reproduce.
Oh,
yeah. It's kind of a fascinating interview. But I will be at Comic-Con. You can find me anywhere there's DC Animated Universe stuff or Artist Alley. Come say hi. I like it when Tested fans come say hi to people, both myself. I'm sure, Norm, you love it too. So
I do.
Hopefully come track us down while we're at Comic-Con, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to share when we get back.
All right. Perfect. And I think that's it.
I don't have the outro.
We don't have an outro piece of music because we need more of them made. If you search tested.com outro, this is only a test outro. There will be a link to our forums. Gives you the source files. You can upload it to SoundCloud. Send me an email linking to that SoundCloud files, norman@tested.com, and we'll play it next week, I promise. Until then, we'll be back. I know you're gone. You're going to be still in San Diego next week, so I think we'll have Jeremy back on, maybe Will as well. But thanks for watching, and we'll see you down at Comic-Con.
Bye.